Hello and welcome to Women for Elections in Conversation with podcast series. Women for Election is working to inspire, equip and support more women to enter and succeed in Irish politics. Along with our training events and advocacy work, we've also developed the In Conversation event series. Born out of our desire to amplify what inspires, supports and drives political leaders, particularly women, and our need to extend our reach beyond our training rooms into homes across Ireland, this series has grown from strength to strength. We have many more events planned for the rest of the year. In this latest episode, founder of Women on Air and successful entrepreneur Margaret Ward interviews Dublin City's Lord Mayor Hazel Chu. Lord Mayor Chu is the chairperson of the Green Party and an elected councillor since 2019. She is the first ethnic Chinese mayor of a major European capital city and the first woman of colour to be a Dublin mayor. There is lots to inspire you in this episode. As well as hearing about what motivates and drives the Lord Mayor, she also tells us about how she successfully ran and managed election campaigns, and most notably when she topped the polls in 2019. In that election, she was elected to Dublin City Council with one third of the first preference votes in the Pembroke LEA. The Lord Mayor also discusses her recent experience running for the Shannon by-elections and for her plans to seek the nomination to run in Dublin Bay South by-election when it is announced. With lots more to this intriguing conversation, I hope you enjoy this episode. And as ever, please feel free to subscribe to the Women for Election podcast. You can also sign up for our newsletter on our website, womenforelection.ie. And if you can spare some cash, please donate via our website to help us do more. Good afternoon, and you're all very welcome to our latest In Conversation With event. I'm very excited this afternoon to have two wonderful leaders in front of me on screen and letting you all join us there in the room. For those of you who haven't met me before, I'm Katrina Gleeson. I'm the CEO of Women for Election, not newly elected, newly joined a few months ago. But today I'm delighted to be with Lord Mayor of Dublin City, Hazel Chu, elected as the 352nd Lord Mayor, but only the ninth Lord Mayor who was a woman ever elected to Dublin City. So 9 out of 352, somebody can do the maths on that. And we're very much looking forward to hearing from you over the next hour, Lord Mayor. And with us today to interview and to host the event, we have Margaret Ward, a great supporter of Women for Election over the last number of years, great interviewer, great leader, great entrepreneur and a huge advocate for women's rights and particularly women's participation and inclusion in the public domains, particularly on air and in media, and lots happening that that Margaret's involved in at the moment, particularly the Why Not Her and the Women on Air initiative and lots more. So I'm not going to speak for too long. I just want to congratulate the Lord Mayor on her announcement today in terms of running for selection for the yet to be announced by election in Dublin Bay South. I always have to, as the culture, have to get that right. And also to acknowledge we've had many supporters and women who've been linked with Women for Election over the years and not, who are putting themselves forward in terms of being potentially a candidate. So we've had Senator Ivana Bakic be selected recently by Labour, and we have Councillor Claire Byrne put her attentions forward last week in terms of selection with the Green Party. And I understand that Norma Burke, the Independent, who was the only woman to run in the last general election in this constituency, is also considering putting herself forward. And there's many more to come. So certainly an interesting campaign to be held ahead once the election's announced, but wishing anybody who's involved the very best. So thank you for joining us for the afternoon. I'm going to hand over to Mags now, who's going to take us through the hour, and look forward to hearing from you both.
Thank you so much, Katrina. Really appreciate it. And absolutely thrilled to welcome Lord Mayor of Dublin, Hazel Chu. I have to say, it feels so good even to say those words. Hazel, you know, I've been following you on Twitter for years and years. And Lord Mayor, I hope that you don't mind me asking the most important question of the day, which is, where can I get your mother's dumplings?
Well, firstly, Hazel is fine. So we can drop the title there. And the dumplings, I'm more than happy to make you some myself. So once we actually have people back in the Mansion House, which feels like it's never going to happen since we haven't had a single event or person in here that's not my mother and my brother and sister-in-law. So yeah, when we can, you can come in here and I will teach you how to make some dumplings. Actually, yourself and Roisin Ingle seems to be the two biggest dumpling fans. So I will gladly make some for you. Or you can go to my mum's restaurant in Monkstown and you can eat them there.
So, well, I did have a reservation there, but unfortunately had to be cancelled because of COVID. But I will be doing that again.
Oh, yeah. I got that call from my mother after the announcements where she quite angrily said to me, what's the point in having a daughter that's Lord Mayor when she can't give you the heads up of anything that happens in government? And I'm there going, well, I'm not in government. So, but yeah, she in fairness, she was angry for a reason. There was so many people that lost jobs that week, and it was awful. So I'm hoping, I sit on the nighttime economy task force, and I'm hoping that as we move out of COVID, this is Catherine Martin's department, we are planning that there will be different events and culture and entertainment and things that will fit into the trade industry as well, that will actually help people back on their feet.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really interesting year for you. You know, you've been elected, you were elected Lord Mayor, I think, at the end of June last year. So soon enough, it's going to be a year. What do you think have been your biggest accomplishments in a very difficult year?
It's funny. Someone asked me that the other day and I was there going, wow, making my mom proud. But it's true. On a personal level, like she's an immigrant into the country that 45 years ago, she came here with nothing, started off as a dishwasher and worked as a dishwasher and a cleaner. I met my dad, who was a kitchen porter in the same restaurant, and then ended up having a family and having me. Like, if you ask the two of them, like, if they ever would have thought their daughter was going to be Lord Mayor of Dublin, they would have just like looked at you as if you had horns on your head. And this is something that I know, I see Teresa on the call there, and Teresa Bukauza, I always pronounce her name wrong, Teresa, I'm sorry. She works for the Immigrant Council of Ireland. And one of the things the organization does is try to encourage people to run and try to encourage more people to run from every background, from migrant backgrounds. And it comes back to the fact that the demographic in the Oireachtas and in even local council doesn't represent what Irish society is. So, and that comes back to my mum's surprise that like an Irish girl with Chinese heritage could become Lord Mayor. And that's what we want to try to do, to make sure that there are other people from every background that can be in this position, that can be in the Senate, the Shannon, that can be in the Dáil.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's so nice about you and your Twitter profile and the way that you speak is you really, like, you keep it real. Like, you know, there's, like, you're not afraid to hide away your family or to be like, I'm just all business. You're kind of like, yeah, hey, you know, I'm Hazel and this is my mom and these are my, you know, it's my husband and my kids. And, you know, social media is quite a double-edged sword, isn't it? And I mean, I know that you've definitely found it a double-edged sword. So what would you say to women who are thinking about running about social media?
I would say that you have to use it. It does have to be used to your advantage. I know Orla Ryan did a piece today, yesterday on the Journal about social media and online abuse of our elected representatives. I look at it and I sometimes go, will this scare a lot of people away? And it will. But at the same time, I want to tell people, listen, we need you, because at the end of the day, we need to legislate for harmful communications, which is, again, what Minister Catherine Martin's department is doing. The other side of things, Minister Helen McEntee, is legislation for hate crime and hate speech. But then there's a bigger piece when it comes to social media companies like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, the whole lot of them, they are marketing that they're a community, then protect those who are in the community. And that's what I've been asking the companies. And this is something, like, Twitter came back to me and said, listen, we get you and we hear you and we see a lot of what's going on. And we're hoping to launch what we call Birdwatch, which will help monitor how things go. And that is something that the companies have to do. But on that also on that note, I know Katrina had mentioned that Norma Burke, who ran as an independent last time, is running this time in Dublin Base Out. I wish her well. And she had asked a question about, should we legislate for making sure that independent candidates don't have to list their address? These are something that we should be doing as well. So there are certain things that we should be protecting women and male for when it comes to running, putting themselves in a public office. A lot of people will say, well, you put yourself in a public office, it's your own fault. But the thing is, there is only so much that you should be able, should have to take just because you're putting yourself forward.
Yeah, I mean, just because you're a public figure doesn't mean that you should take abuse, you know, and a lot of the abuse targeted towards women is sexualized abuse or threats of violence against your family. So like, that's insane. In 2009, right, talking about social media and campaigning and putting yourself in the public eye, but in 2009, you topped the polls with over 4,000 first preference votes, which is just extraordinary. So why do you think that is? What was it during that campaign that gave you such visibility and the number of people that gave you first preference?
I would love to know because it may help me in future.
yeah, maybe.
That's putting it bluntly, but this is the thing. I love looking at tallies and breaking down how the electoral system works. Like I chair the electoral task force for the Green Party. Now I have to again disclaim that for the upcoming selection, I won't be chairing it because I don't want to influence anything. But in my role as chairing, what I look is data and I look at kind of tallies and trends. And I guess for me, there was three things. The green wave was happening. So we had people who were topping the poll across the board. Like one of our rising stars, as I call her, Una Power, our career lock in Dunleary, she topped the poll. Like my other half topped the poll. My colleague who's also running for selection, Claire Byrne, topped the poll. The difference with myself was that it was 4,000 votes. It was double what a lot of people, even within our party, got off topping the poll. So I looked at those votes and I looked at the boxes. So there were a few things. So the green wave was one. The second thing was I look different. So like I calling a spade, I look different. And when you have a poster up there of someone more noticeable, it sometimes works, it sometimes doesn't. There has been many times that we encourage people from different backgrounds to run, especially of different skin color, and it doesn't work. But in terms of Pembroke, I guess I also I'm lucky and grateful for the fact that people wanted to see a change and they saw that this would be a good change and they voted for it. So I am very grateful for their vote. But I think it's timing. There's a lot that has to do with it. That's luck. Like I canvassed the constituency twice. I literally went out canvassing every day myself and Patrick had to decide who was taking Alex to go on a canvass or who were we landing Alex with tonight. And we did that. Like we did that for, I started canvassing in October of 2018 for election that was 2019. So I walked the constituency twice, I knocked on every door, and that's something that I would say to people, that's what you have to put in.
The shoe leather, the mileage, right? And not just putting, you know, flyers in through people's door, but actually being on the doorstep yourself. Would you say that that's key?
Absolutely. And there's a lot of like, especially in this role, what I've learned from this role is a lot of people call me, not for me to fix their problems, but they call me and email me just so that they can tell their problems to someone. And when you go canvassing, that's exactly what it is. You're knocking on their door and giving yourself, be it 2 minutes, be it 5 minutes, that time where someone has that you have their or they have your attention and that's what they want. So because too often they see politicians on radio, on TV, in newspapers and they don't get to talk to them. When they call their offices, it's someone else answering. And this is the thing why canvassing is really important. And it's something that I'm wondering for the upcoming by-election, what's going to happen? Because there's going to be no canvassing. So
yeah, what are you going to do? Walk around in one of those big bubbles, you know, on the canvas? Hey, come over and say hello to the bubble. You can't really be knocking on doors, right?
I like to see what will happen. For many reasons, I like to see what will happen with that election. But for like just looking at it from an electoral system point of view, it's really interesting because like the shoe leather factor is huge when it comes to election campaigns. And you're talking about suddenly it not happening. So what do you move everything online and say, hey, I'm opening a Zoom at this time and hope for people to turn up? Or is it the case that you have high profile candidates like the like we've mooted, it's been mooted that Kayle O'Connell might run, and some people say, well, if she runs she'll get it because of the name recognition as well. So this is the thing, like, this coming election is going to be really interesting to see how elections happen in COVID.
And strategy is everything, right?
Yeah.
So let's just talk a little bit about, say, your strategy and visibility within the party, right? So, you know, you ran for the Shannon as an independent. There was kind of a mixed response to that. Was it worth it? Was it worth it in terms of visibility? If we could just talk a little bit about that.
When you say mixed response, I thought you were being quite kind. was it worth it? This is something I get asked quite often about the Shannon run. Was it worth it and would I do it again? And a lot of people go, oh, if Hazel Chu knew there'd be a by-election, she wouldn't have done it. I would do it in a heartbeat. I did it for very specific reasons. And I did it because in this day and age, in 2021, there shouldn't be a ballot where it's fully men, and that's no offense to the men at all, but it shouldn't be fully men and shouldn't be zero diversity as well. And for a woman that has been talking to everyone from school children to panels like this about how important it is that people put themselves forward and people put themselves on a ballot, even if they don't win, it seemed kind of hypocritical of me to not do it then. And I lost, and I lost badly. I came last, but I knew I was going to, lose, and I knew I was going to get a hammering over it publicly. And well, internally, I wasn't quite sure, but like publicly anyway. But is it worth it? Yeah, I'm really hoping that every party, when moving away from it, will go, oh yeah, let's make sure we do have women, we do look at diversity, otherwise another Hazel Chu might come along and wreck the party. So and that's like, I'm not being facetious saying this, but it may help people and understand why it's so important to have someone different on the ballot, even if they don't win, because you can't be what you can't see. We keep on hearing that phrase this year. And until we are willing to put our money where our mouth is, until we're willing to change the system, even if it means not winning, even if it means public humiliation, that's all we have to do. So
it's wonderful. So you did it on a point of principle. And I love that, you know, maybe we can start using you as a verb. Well, like, if you don't put me on the ticket, I might do a Hazel Chu. So we can make it a thing. I'll do a Hazel Chu. So very good. Fair play.
You like the fact that my mother does use my name as a verb that wrecks stuff. So maybe it is appropriate that certain people in certain parties look at it as Hazel coming along to wreck stuff. So
love it. Love it. Okay. Yeah. Sometimes you have to, what's that expression? There was a guy in the UK and he said, sometimes it's the boat rockers who often help build a better boat. I think it was Tony Benn in the UK. And that's often the case, isn't it? You know, the boat's been designed one way for a long time, but maybe the boat was only designed so men could row the boat. But you need to design the boat so that everybody gets a chance to row and to be the leader. So fantastic. Thank you for doing that for all of us. Thank you.
And it's funny because I'm like, the whole doing it for everyone sounds like I'm a bit of a martyr. I'm not. I did it for, like, one person I did it for was my daughter. She's 3.5 years old. I like her to think that when she grows up, she can be anything. She can run for anything. And it wouldn't be like my mom who thought I couldn't be. That's a reverse. So I want to make sure that in a political system, we do represent everyone and we do look at things and go, okay, how do we do this differently? We don't have a candidate here. Why don't we? Let's run one. Let's look at people and see what they can bring to the table. Like, and the other thing, Margaret, I really want to know is, with so many people that had an issue with this, what was it that they had an issue with? Was it that a woman put themselves forward? Was it that the woman showed ambition? What is it that really annoyed the hell out of everyone? I still haven't copped onto that. Like, you can talk about party issues, you can talk about it a whole lot, but give me the reason why it bugged and annoyed so many people.
Well, do you? I often think about things like that. And I think it's like, did they feel, well, she didn't wait her turn? You know, but women are always told it's never their turn. And so, I mean, how far are we from gender pay gap equality, 250 years away? Because we're just supposed to sit back and wait for our turn. So, I mean, do you think, was there a bit of that? Like, oh, she, it's not her turn. She spoke out of turn. So therefore we're not tolerating it.
But then when is your turn? Because like, if we're talking about waiting your turn, someone had proposed two candidates running. That didn't happen because, again, there was a turn issue perhaps there, or that we mightn't get it. I threw my name into the Shannon and then again and again. So like, when is the turn going to happen as well? Like, and I don't mean it from a personal kind of point of view of my career, but when someone is told to wait their turn and that someone has waited, then what happens then? Do you do continuously tell them, listen, just continue to wait your turn. It'll eventually happen for you.
Like it'll happen for your great, great, great granddaughter. That's what happens when you wait your turn, Hazel.
Like I was talking to, like I went to the Inns. I was talking to one of the alumni coordinators here yesterday, and we were talking about Averil Deverell, and she was one of those women who had been told to wait her turn. So because she was the first ever to qualify out there, and she would have been told to wait her turn. And even nowadays we have, like I used to head function for one of the biggest multinationals, and there were plenty of times when I would see people, women especially, in various departments, from marketing to HR, that would be again told, wait your turn. Oh, don't worry, it will happen. Oh, don't go for that yet because you're not ready for it. Like, no one will ever be ready for something unless they go try it.
Absolutely. And it is a way of ensuring that there aren't more women in the pool. So it is. I mean, it's often a strategy, whether people know it consciously or not. So why, if somebody said to you, oh, look, I mean, Irish politics is fine, we don't need diversity, you know, but you strongly believe that we do. Why? Why does all Irish politics need to be more diverse?
Because that's what our population is coming to. Like that, like, and a lot of people, a lot of certain minority of people, very far right groups will tell me, oh no, our Irish population is becoming this, we have to stop it. It's not a bad thing. Multiculturalism isn't a bad thing. I'm sure many people will send me emails now to tell me how I'm speaking through my backside and it is a bad thing, but it's not. Look at how it has, where it has brought us in terms of culture, in terms of simply food. You and I were talking about dumplings there, Margaret. In terms of frontline workers, like who holds your society up and what do they do? So you got to kind of ask, you suddenly don't want migrants in place? Well, that's kind of hard because you need them. So, and it's the same conversation we would have had back in the day. Well, like a lot of people tell me it's not my ancestors, but I feel they're my daughter's ancestors, is that back in the day when Ireland was getting decimated, during the famine, people had to go abroad, and they also held up society. They worked their frontline jobs. They worked the badly paid jobs. They held up the societies there, and that's what migrants are doing now. And unless we are willing to give them a place at the table, unless we are able to say this is what we plan to do in terms of progressiveness, we're never going to progress. We're always going to be this group of people that decide for people rather than let them decide for themselves.
And when we get a greater diversity and more women into politics, what do you think might happen? What would the result be?
I think one of the things is if we had more women and more women of diversity during COVID, for example, and I'm sure a lot of people will hate me saying this, but I think we'll be in a lot better place. In terms of maternal health, we'll be in a lot of better place. Like I started off something a couple of months ago, asking women who were going through pregnancy to email me and tell me their stories. Wow. I got 952 emails.
952?
952, and they're still come. And they are all horrific stories about how women feel left behind during COVID because they were pregnant or giving birth and they weren't allowed to support it. And they had to sit through scans and look at horrific things on their own. And this is the thing. We didn't have enough women at the table, and now we're leaving women behind. We look at press conferences, and there's a line that Sarah McInerney says about her image, her kind of image that lasts with her in her brain, is that it's all male up at the podium. And this is the same when we look at the moment, there was a couple of months ago when we were looking at shutting down. Again, everyone that was going into Leinster House for that meeting were male. And I'm not I'm not questioning their expertise. What I am questioning is, how does a man sitting there who has never given birth, who has never had to suffer the issues of not being supported during pregnancy, make that decision about pregnant women? Same as frontline workers. You find that women have been the ones who are predominantly on the front line. Women are the ones who are the carers at home while doing their jobs as well. Like, I see one a woman here on this call, and she is an incredibly strong woman, and she has been the carer to her mother for during COVID, while the carer to her family as well. Who supports her? So, and this is why, if we had women at the table, and more women at the table, not just this measly 21%, is that you will actually start making decisions for women. And if you have more migrants and diversity and every diversity from every level at the table, you will start making those decisions that actually would benefit people rather than just what you think would benefit them.
Well, even things like homeschooling, for example, and the impact that that's largely had on women, and also how that's led to women leaving the workforce, right? So there's an economic impact there. But I mean, a lot of these issues were raised early on and completely ignored and continue to be ignored, you know, because they can be, right? I mean, what do you think about that? So all these issues are being raised. You get 952 emails. The politicians, or mainly men, know about it. And no decisions are changed.
Yeah, and I'm sure plenty of people in the audience would go, but Hazel, your party's in government, do something about it. And you're right. So and I had this yesterday when we launched the maternal roadmap from our party. A lot of women texted and emailed me going, hey, what about the immediate issues and what are you doing? That's something that we have been talking to our cabinet colleagues about, and they have been pushing. Now, the thing is, when you're at a party with two other parties, it does become hard. And one of the things I said to Stephen Donnelly's advisor is whether we can just have a proper sit down and look at the health issues of what affects women. But then you also have you need Leo Varadkar's department to look at the economic issues as well, and the pay issues. Like, you still have Debenhams workers how many days has it been? 200 and something? So.
And if they were mainly men, you have to wonder if they were male workers.
They would have rocked up. They would have literally said, this isn't on, give us this. And someone would have listened to them. Like, there is a line that it's a cheesy comedy, but it is so apt as well. I was watching Ocean's 8 while hoovering the other night and cleaning. And there was a line that males get noticed and women get ignored. And for once, we want to get ignored was her line. But that line is very true. Women do get ignored. And I'm guessing some men will hear us say this and go, oh my God, like, how dare they? And we give them everything. They have half of everything. We don't. We're like, gender pay gap, 14.4%. Political gap, 21% versus the rest. So we look at women versus men on the front lines when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to retail, when it comes to teaching. So, and you kind of realize there's a massive gap here across the board.
Absolutely.
So how many women CEOs do we know in Ireland? So,
and women who run their own businesses don't get anywhere near the venture capital funding compared to men. The scourge of domestic violence, coercive control. I mean, it goes on and on. Being visible and being invisible, right? So being ignored or being accepted. So you're going to run now for Dublin Bay South. But what's your long term? Like, what do you think your next steps are? So you're not short of ambition, and you state your ambition, and you are of the opinion it's important to do that and to show it. So what's your vision for your future political career?
Well, like some Claire Byrne asked me today, whether if I don't win at this election as a Green, will I go independent or any other party? No, I won't. So if I don't win this election convention, I will support whoever is running in this election convention. And my overall aim, I've said it very clearly in business posts and other avenues, is that I do want to run for the Dáil, and I don't want it to just be me. I'm hoping that Theresa will have more candidates push forward. Is that I want And this may sound selfish, but I want my 3.5-year-old to understand she can be it. So she will see, like, and this isn't a sob story, but I used to, when I was growing up, I would look in the mirror and wish I was different. Like, because of schoolyard taunting and other issues, I would look at the mirror and wish I was white. And I would think that my problems would go away then. And I don't want that for Alex. I want her to look in the mirror and go, yay, I'm that color. And my mother did this and her mates did that. And you know, this is what I can do. And my generation can do. Like, when we look at tackling systemic racism and the issues that come with it, it doesn't go away with one generation. But if we're not the generation that's willing to start it, it's never going to go away. So, and for me, it's been very simple that I have this goal. And for the Lord Mayor's role, I had 3 goals. One was tackle homelessness and housing. Second thing was tackle discrimination. And third thing was to look at a sustainable city. Those goals will still remain with me when I leave this role. And if I don't get selected, I will continue working with the party to make sure we try to drive those roles through our cabinet colleagues, through our work in government, because we have to do it. Like, you asked me at the start, what was one of my proudest moments? I didn't really know until today when I was hosting. I'm the chair of the subgroup for homelessness that's in the Housing Strategic Policy Committee of DCC. That subcommittee did not exist before my term. That subcommittee only existed because I set up a task force called the Homeless Task Force, and we had a list of recommendations for the minister. And we then brought forward to the fact that this is an issue that is an emergency and we need to create a group that will tackle it. And that's when DCC said, okay, we will make sure, we will make it into the subgroup of the housing SPC. And and that's one of the things I'll leave as a legacy. And I'm grateful for that. But those are things that I'll still continue to work on going into the future.
You it's interesting now that you brought up those things. So you mentioned kind of your 3 main goals. So for anybody who's thinking about running in the future themselves or supporting others as a campaign manager, I mean, you've done it all, right? So, like, in terms of your professional background, you were a barrister, you were a fundraiser, you were a production manager, you worked in business, you were Diageo's head of brand, corporate and trade communications. So you have a lot of bits and pieces in your toolkit that helped you run your husband's campaign and your own campaign. So what would you say, what advice would you give to people in terms of how you run it? Like, I would work with politicians in Europe. And one of the things always seems to be, think about your strategy and the issues that you can make a difference on. So would you say to people, start with your strategy, identify your issues in your campaign? What advice would you give people on the call if they're thinking about it?
Firstly, if you're going to be a campaign manager, make sure you love that person. So, if you don't love them the way that I loved my fiance, at least you like them so you don't kill them halfway through, because there's going to be lots of those moments. Like when Patrick came to me and said, hey, I want to run for local election, I kind of looked at him and went, you're kidding me, right? So this was 2013 and the Greens had imploded 2 years beforehand. And like doors that we were canvassing were slamming in our faces. So I kind of just looked at him going, you're actually joking. But he wanted to do it. And we did what you just said there, Margaret. We sat down and understood what his strategy was. Because when you look at Greens, you automatically think environment and green, which is the first and foremost, because climate action is so important. So that was the first baseline for him. But then the others, like every politician talk about, we want X, Y, Z for our community. We're going to do this for business. We're going to do this for locals. But it was understanding from Patrick's point of view, or any candidate, if someone is looking at being a manager or as a candidate, looking at, well, what is it that's their selling point? Like I come from a law background, but I was also a marketeer. What is the selling point? And his selling point was very simple. He was a child protection social worker that worked in a homeless and wet shelter for many years. So he had that coming from the youth background and looking at what we needed to do for the next generation. And that was it. So, and we kind of framed the campaign around that. So if we were looking at different candidates here and we were looking at different people, we would, of course, ask them, well, if you're a candidate, tell me what is the 3 things you care most about. Is it homelessness? Is it older people? Is it carers? Is it education? Pick the 3 key things and form your campaign around that. And make sure the three key things are prioritized as well, that you have the first most important thing that you will talk about constantly, and then you have the others. So no one wants, everyone thinks a candidate needs to be an all-round, like everything. If you find me one of those people, I'll call you lucky, because no one is. Like, even if you look at the Bidens or the Kamalas that try to appeal to everyone, you don't. There is a section of your vote that you will target, and then there are others that you will try to pick up along the way and have transfers from.
Thank you. And here's one final question before we open it up to a Q&A. What is your most practical piece of advice for any woman who's putting herself forward to run in the local election 2024?
I hate to say this, and it shouldn't come to this, but have thick skin. So as women, you already have thick skin, because God knows the amount of times you've been told, hey, you're not doing this right, or you can't have that. But there, it's really quite important. I thought I had thick skin before this year, but some of the crap that's come through the door or at the door or through the email had made me realize, wow, you need a lot thicker. And a lot of people go, well, does that not deter people from running because they'll get abused? I'd rather be honest with people and say, you will get abused. But the good thing about that, not that there's a good thing about abuse, but the fact remains is that if you're getting it, you're doing something right. And I would say to anyone that's thinking of running, please run. And if you get the abuse, there will be supports there, but you also will walk away knowing one thing, that you are doing something right and you are rubbing people up the wrong way.
And as part of that, as a campaigner, I would also say, make sure you have a very good, strong support network.
Yeah,
because you will be abused. So you need somebody's shoulder to cry on, or rage to, or whatever, right? So, sorry.
Well, and this is it. Like, we looked at repeal, we look at marriage referendum. I look at a lot of the campaigners and canvassers. They all tell me that they had strong support networks. Like, if we look at repeal and In Your Shoes, that site was incredible, created by the creators, and it was there to support people. And that's what I think politics miss sometimes, that we are so eager to win the seat or go for that we don't form the foundations that you need to support each other while doing it. Like, at the end of the day, it's politics. You go in there and you may be the ones governing or opposition, but you all still have to work together.
Absolutely. Okay. So if anybody has questions, if you could put them in the chat function there. I do have one here from Teresa, who you mentioned earlier. And she says, Kamala Harris, in her inauguration speech, thanked all the women who came before her and whose shoulders she stands. And given that you're one of the first ethnic minority women in the public domain, putting your shoulders together to lift the generation, whose shoulders are you standing on? Great question.
I don't think it would be any surprise that I mentioned my mother here. So, like, my mother, who left her home at 18 and came over not knowing anyone and not speaking a word of English, with just one bag and building her life from a dishwasher and cleaner to then running four restaurants. She only has two now, but running four restaurants. And my grandmother, who was married to an alcoholic, five kids, was also a rock miner in the local quarry while trading bananas in the market stall. These are women that I am, whose shoulder I stand on. But that aside, when it comes to the electorate, people like, and I'm not just buttering her up here, but people like Teresa, people like Lahine, and everyone else here in this group are the women that I stand on, because they're the women who support me and champion me and elect me at the end of the day. And those are the women I have to thank. So, and like, this is the thing, like, you say, how do I get elected? I got elected because I was lucky, but I also had really good support in place. And there are so many Irish women that just want a better society.
And you also worked your socks off. Like, let's be honest. You did. And went through loads of pairs of shoes, I'm sure. Okay. And I'm going to ask you this question myself. Were there any people or stories or books that really inspired you as a girl that made you think, oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way? Like, for me, it was The Handmaid's Tale. You know, I read that in the 1980s and I was like, whoa. You know, to me, it was a direct response to the Reagan era and the pushback on a lot of things. So, there anybody who inspired you, or any film or
Bernadette Devlin. So her book is on my other half read it first, and then he kind of left it there. So I picked it up one day and I just read it in pretty much the day. It was one of those days where I actually had time, because it was incredible. And I had the honor of being on a panel with her not that long ago. And the woman is incredible. It just, the experience, but also the fight. Like, a lot of people kind of say, oh, the fight fades in you. You reach so much walls and barriers and abuse, you just lose it. Bernadette Devlin never lost it. And like, I gotta say, like, she's incredible. And it was a great book as well. So
she is incredible. And her community work, regardless, you know, she just really kept going with that. That's amazing. If anybody hasn't read about her or read her speeches, I mean, she was written up all over the world for being a young firebrand and incredibly talented speechwriter as well. Okay, so great question.
The Price of My Soul, sorry.
The Price of My Soul, yes, excellent book, and all libraries have it. Super. Okay, so Maura Byrne here is saying, well done on your achievement so far. You've mentioned having a thicker skin as a huge learning or advice for women who might consider running for elected office. Have there been any sweet surprises that have happened to you since becoming Lord Mayor?
Oh, well, like, they're sweet. I'm not quite sure. Well, they are surprises. So anytime that there's issues at the door or through the mail or on reported about abuse, I would always inevitably get some really nice mail and cards from people that are really supportive. And they're lovely. They're just, and this is why I say,
nice. Gosh, you don't see that stuff reported.
No, and I do say it. I say thank you to those who have written in. There's like, I know I harp about racism, but it is something that's here in Ireland, and it is systemic, because we look at your traveller community, and we just had a chat last night with the Green Party about how it's ingrained in Irish society. And I look at that and I go, well, majority of Irish people are still lovely. They are still lovely. They're kind. They're people who did welcome my mum and my dad, and they are the ones who will write into me and say that, hey, like, listen, it'll be okay. So, and this is, I don't know if it's a sweet surprise, but it was definitely something that I didn't get a lot of before. So it was lovely to receive it in this role anyway.
That's a gorgeous story. That's really lovely. Okay, so I think it's Blaheen Gallagher says, despite the statistics, there are still glass ceilings. And when we talk about promoting women in a special way to even things out, reverse discrimination, it is used against women's success, denigrating the achievement. Any thoughts about how we can overcome such negativity besides brazing it out and time?
Well, Blaheen and myself would know about brazing it out. Blaheen Gallagher is the national coordinator of the Green Party, and she is an incredible woman, and she has broken many a glass ceilings. And the thing is, I think we can either sit it out, and this comes back to my point about challenging. Like, I know a lot of people would go, sit out, hold strong, and it will be your time at some stage. But at what point do we say no? And this is Blaheen's point of, do we brazen it out? I would say no. Like, that's my opinion. I would say, listen, it's time that we challenge. And you look at the previous referendums that I mentioned, it's only when people were willing to challenge. Like, we could have sat on repeal for another decade, but you had the likes of Alva Smith, you have the likes of Orla O'Connor, who just went, you know what, enough, like, and Roisin Ingle and Tara, and like, you had people who were willing to put their own, like, the amount of trolling those women got, the amount of trolling, that abuse and trolling that so many women in those campaigns got, and they put themselves there because it was worth it. And this is why I think, no matter what, and no matter how there will be pushback of people calling certain people race baiters or egging or too ambitious or egging things on, we have to do it. We have to look at the issues that we have on hand and challenge it. And to Blaheen's point, women, anytime you see a ballot or you see a application work, or you see a setup of a group and you don't see a woman there, ask why there's not a woman there. Like, I looked at the recent transport committee, and this is something we raised on the in our parliamentary party call as well, that transport committee, it was all men. But when safety of women is at an all-time, the issue of safety of women is at all-time high, and transport is one of the key things, when you have a full transport committee of just men, then it's not going to benefit women.
Yeah, Absolutely right. And the thing is, like, when you do ask that question, you inevitably get pushback. Like, oh, it doesn't matter. It actually does matter. It does matter. And we have to ask the questions and we have to put ourselves forward. There's another question here. So hello, thank you both for a great panel and for your time. You're very welcome. For the younger generation of women who are interested in politics, but still find the Irish political system and framework intimidating, what's a good way to learn more and how are policy and how policies are produced and where the balances of power are? Great question.
Okay. So firstly, I would say to anyone in the audience, including this person asking a question, my email is lordmayor@dublincity.ie. That's lordmayor@dublincity.ie. If you ever wanted to banter about politics and ask about political systems and running for elections, I'm more than happy to answer you. Usually I do it over a pint, but we'll just have to do it over Zoom and a cup of tea. And yeah, and anyone here with any other questions, please ask. But to answer that particular question, like I would, back in the day, I would say go canvassing with someone because you learn very quickly what that party is about and what the candidate is about and what the organization, how the whole thing works very quickly when you go canvassing. But since we can't, I would say wherever electoral area you are at, contact the local representative or the TD and say, hey, I want to know what you're doing right now within your office. And it will give you a taste of, well, what they do. They'll give you sometimes they'll give you just a vague answer, but push and say, listen, I want to know how your party works and give me a breakdown of your party. And then understanding how the policies work. Well, the thing is, policy work is like, I look at the Green Party policy work and we have a chair of the policy council, Michael Ewing, and he's incredible. And the policy is built from ground up. So each party's policy may look very similar, but they are quite different because if they're ones done by the member, there are lots of people feeding it onto the ground. So to the person asking, I would say, if you are interested, give me a buzz or drop me an email. I'll gladly hook you up with myself or people in the Green Party or in any other party. It doesn't have to be the Greens to talk to you about how the party works.
And you can also approach the youth representatives of any of the parties. They're always keen to talk about what they do. You can ask them for their policy documents or their platforms. You can go online. There are lots of ways to learn. Okay, now we have a question from Olivia Smith that ties into also a question that I had. So this is going to be a double hander. So Olivia is asking, do you think there's merit in having politics and governance as compulsory subjects in school? She said, I think if people understood government and the role of government better, there would be a lot more educated voting as opposed to voting for who your mother and father traditionally voted for. I honestly think there's such a disconnect between government and the people, and that's shocking. Are there any thoughts on how this should be addressed?
Well, I would say the first suggestion by Olivia about compulsory teaching is correct. Like, we have CSPE that covers, that's civics basically, to cover kind of how the society works. But there needs to be more than that. Like, I say this to people and they sometimes look at me with raised eyebrows. I didn't know anything about the Irish political system until I was in college. So, like, I would have gone through teenage years and not knowing at all. And that's mainly because, well, my parents were busy putting food on the table. There was 9 of us in a 3-bedroom house. Their main concern was putting food on the table. Politics didn't matter to them. So in turn, politics didn't matter to me because I never got taught it. I didn't get taught it in school. My parents didn't think about it, didn't talk about it. And I was completely clueless until I got into college. And when I got into college, all the society suddenly was, oh, you should join our society. So like for all you know, I could have become a Fine Gaeler, or a Fianna Fáil, because like when you get to college, anyone who wants to be your friend, you kind of go over and you could have joined. But so to Olivia's point, it is crucial that we have we talk about government, we talk about politics, we talk about policies from a young age onwards. So, and I don't mean just in secondary school, I mean your 10, 11 year olds should be learning about this stuff. Like my godchild talks to me about politics and she's 10. So, and this is the thing, she knows through her parents, but many parents probably won't be interested or don't know. And to Olivia's point about voting, as per family voting or because of previous generations, that does have to change. And I'm not saying, I don't And people would go, oh, of course you're saying that as a Green to change things. I'm saying it because unless we're willing to change it and unless we're willing to show various parties, including my own, that people actually care about who is in government and care about policies rather than just the name, then things will continually be the same. You always have the same parties that are in government, and sometimes that never. I'm not saying that they don't do good work. I'm saying they don't enact the changes that we want.
Thank you. And my final question now, because I know we are tight for time, but you know, you bring up some really good points. Okay, so you hear my American accent, like I'm a foreigner. So my parents are Irish, but I've been in Ireland for 26 years. And I've really only started to learn about the political parties and the systems, the way things work here, say the last 10 years since I started campaigning. One thing they do in the States, and I'm wondering if you think that's something that could work here, it's called the Get Out the Vote campaign. And young people start working on that. So you don't go, hey, vote for me. You go, just vote. So do you think that that's something that could work to activate young people in this country?
There was Rock the Vote in 2000 and I think 3 or 4 when I was just in college. There was Rock the Vote, and it did encourage some people. And I think Get Out the Vote will work, but it needs to be like, this is the thing. If we look at our last year of electoral success, be it the Greens or any other party, it's thanks to young people. It's thanks to the people that have been out there on the streets campaigning, protesting. And those are the generation that's steering the electoral success of parties these days. So should we have Get Out the Vote? Yes. But how do we make it to fit into Irish kind of not even traditions, but like the Get Out and Vote, the vote in US will be through colleges and it will be through campaigns. Can we do that through here? Would it be driven by the political parties and their groups? Will it be driven by the college themselves? I think it needs to be driven by the colleges themselves. And I think it needs to be mandated in colleges that people are encouraged to vote and encouraged to participate. That is the function of our education system.
But aren't we, if we're just saying it's colleges, then there are so many people we're leaving out. Like, isn't it something we should be doing in primary and secondary schools?
Absolutely. I think, again, back to the school system of, if we're looking at Olivia's idea of having compulsory subjects in those, then we should also have, and I'm sure teachers will hate me for saying this because it adds on to their work, but I know so many teachers that take on subjects like climate action without being mandated to do it. So you're looking for people who will be willing to drive these issues within the classroom as well while talking about it. So primary and secondary school, you have things where it will be once every quarter or half a year that you have conventions or webinars or campaigns to drive people to know what's happening in government. You then have it closer to election time. And I can tell you, for the politicians that are looking after the education beef, this will benefit not only the future generations, but your own campaigns, because you'll get canvassers. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Train them young. Well, look, I can't thank you enough, Lord Mayor of Dublin, Hazel Chu, for a great interview and for giving us your time today. It's been such a pleasure. I've enjoyed following you on Twitter and your career so much. So thank you for continuing to inspire and motivate greater diversity in our political system. Katrina?
Yes, I'm buzzing over here in Sligo as I sit. Lord Mayor, thank you so much. I have got such energy from you, such inspiration from you, and such wisdom, and will take away most. If we're not the generation that is going to change it, then who is? And I think no matter where we've come from, any of us around the table here, we've broken ground somewhere. And I think in response to that last conversation you've just been in, taking the old phrase well used in the old political system here, early and often. I'm a great advocate for get into the, even to preschool, but definitely to primary school, and get awareness around civic responsibility, engagement, citizenship, the political system, and girls as leaders, as so young, and celebrating that. So thank you both so much. It's been a tremendous, it has flown as an Ireland's event. And thank you for your time. And Mag, thank you so much again. Just a fantastic interview. I know that you've got to run off. Just to say to our listeners, thank you again for your engagement. We have an Inspire campaign school. So anybody who's thinking about it, or if you know somebody, look around you. If you think anybody who should be running, our next event is next Tuesday evening. We have our Inspire campaign school. Details are on our website. And also on the 26th of May, we have Senator Eileen Flynn, who's going to be speaking at our next In Conversation event. So please join us for that. But just again to say to the Lord Mayor, thank you so much and very best of luck as you campaign into the future. And as you finish out your year, a very important year that you've run and held office in these very challenging times for your city and for our country. So thank you for all your great work and look forward to engaging and picking that brain over a cup of tea soon. Take care.
What time is Eileen coming? She is incredible.
It's on the 26th of May and it's at 12:30 in lunchtime. And yes, and we have other events coming up. We're going to be running events until the end of June. So stay in touch and we'll be back then in the autumn. Thanks a million, everyone. Many thanks again to our guests in this episode, Lord Mayor Hazel Chew and Margaret Ward. We hope you enjoyed listening to the conversation. You can listen back to all our podcasts wherever you find your podcasts on social media and womenforelection.ie. You can also join our conversations on Instagram and on Twitter using the hashtag #morewomen.